You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. An earthquake caused a fire and spill at a nuclear reactor in northwest Japan this morning. The 6.8 magnitude quake shook buildings as far as 160 miles away in Tokyo. At least 8 people were killed and over 900 injured. In Iraq, 2 suicide car bombings today in Kirkuk killed as many as 85 and wounded another 180. In Baghdad, bombings killed 9 and wounded another 9. Also in Iraq, some 8,000 troops have launched a new operation aimed at clearing out al-Qaeda insurgents south of Baghdad. The early morning attacks are designed to halt the flow of weaponry and fighters infiltrating southern Baghdad. UN inspectors confirm North Korea has shut down its nuclear reactor. The move is the first step towards abandonment of Pyongyang's nuclear weaponry program. Six-party talks resume Wednesday. In northwest Pakistan, Islamic militants killed as many as 80 people in a weekend series of bombings. Al-Qaeda last week called for attacks against the government of President Pervez Musharraf following troop seizure of the Red Mosque compound in Islamabad. In a press conference today, President Bush announced a multilateral conference on Middle East peace to take place this fall. Israel, the Palestinian Authority, and neighboring governments that support a Palestinian state are scheduled to attend the meeting that will be presided over by Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. The president also promised to increase aid to the Abbas administration. The White House says the president would veto a bipartisan Senate proposal to increase health care funding for U.S. children. The program would expand assistance to the nation's estimated 8 million uninsured children. The U.N. says Albania has become the first nation to destroy its complete supply of chemical weapons. The country's 71 tons of mustard gas and other banned toxic chemicals were demolished under the supervision of U.N. inspectors. Chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, General Peter Pace, said today that the military is considering a range of possible changes, including a further surge in U.S. troops. There are currently 180,000 troops in Iraq, 30,000 of which are a result of the surge in January. In Los Angeles, the Roman Catholic Cardinal formally apologized to more than 500 alleged victims of priest sexual abuse. The $660 million settlement will be divided between these victims. It is the largest settlement thus far in the abuse scandal. The first Republican nominee for the 2008 U.S. presidential primary has dropped out of the race. Former Governor Jim Gilmore announced his withdrawal Sunday. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
Proficiency in reading and writing is a crucial connection to higher learning for both youth and adults. Without the foundation of basic English skills, access to education and employment is severely limited, if not impossible, for an estimated 40 million illiterate and semi-literate adults nationwide. If someone you know needs help in learning to read and write, there are local groups that can provide assistance without the threat of embarrassment. The Monterey County Free Library System offers unlimited one-on-one classes meant to help anyone at any proficiency level step over the language barrier. Weekly classes are held at several free library locations across Monterey County at no charge. For more information on Monterey County Free Library's Adult Literacy Program, call 424-3564. This message brought to you by the Quality News Network.
A joint project between American and Canadian researchers has discovered a gene variant that can determine a child's risk of acquiring juvenile diabetes. The findings may improve doctors' ability to screen newborns for their propensity to develop the crippling disease. The 6 medics sentenced to death in Libya on charges of infecting children with HIV have reached a deal that will free them. The Palestinian and Bulgarian medics were accused of starting an HIV epidemic in 1999, which HIV experts say began before they arrived. The families of the 426 infected children will receive over $400 million. China has stopped U.S. imports from 7 top meat producers, accusing the companies of sending contaminated chicken and fish to Beijing. In recent weeks, China has been criticized for its tainted exports of pet foods, toothpaste, toys, pharmaceuticals, and other products. For the first time, Portuguese women will be permitted to obtain legal abortions. The new law sets a 3-day waiting period and permits doctors to refuse to participate on moral grounds. Over the weekend, a court-ordered estate auction raised $2.35 million to pay restitution to about 600 alleged embezzlement victims of former university professor Al Parrish. Light sweet crude is trading at $74.15 a barrel. On Wall Street this hour, the Dow is up 47 and closed at a new record high. The Nasdaq is down 10, and the S&P 500 down 3. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Reed Kavner.
Okay! Don't you!
Stop America!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! When it's high summer in the mountains, you think of cool glades with tiny streams that run down in the crevices between the mountains and the babbling of water over ancient rock. And you think of a place that is removed from the parching heat of the deep south and southwest. It ain't here, baby! No. In the places that Massey Energy has not yet turned into a desert moonscape, it's pretty hellish here. I mean, we're at a decent elevation, and, you know, you beg for a breeze.
Naked radio.
I mean, yeah, we're, Agnes and me, we're one step away from naked radio. I'm not kidding. You're well familiar with the fact that one of my favorite books is Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. And one of my favorite passages from that book occurs early on. Of course, it's one favorite passage after another in that wonderful, wonderful text. But she describes her hometown of the fictitious Macomb, Alabama. The reality of Macomb is, of course, Monroeville, Alabama. Being in Alabama, you have to say Ville. You can't say Ville, it's Ville. Monroeville. As if it's just too hot to get the whole damned word out. But she described Macomb and said it was a tired old town where men's stiff collars wilted by 9 in the morning and ladies were like soft tea cakes with frostings of sweat and sweet talcum. That's pretty much us, too, and apparently it's New York City, and it's the entire eastern half of the United States, the better part of the Southwest, and sweltering heat even in the great Northwest, if I hear correctly. Welcome to the global warming that ain't. Welcome to a world where, as I said, cool mountain glens are buried under megatons of rubble from hilltops, where tiny streams that are the capillaries of the mighty Mississippi and the Ohio River are buried and killed forevermore in an endless, greedy, anxious lust for seams of coal that are maybe 3 inches, 4 inches thick. Welcome to Dick Cheney's America. You know, for years now we've called it Bushmerica. But no, unlike right-wing yammerheads, I will tell you when I am wrong, and I have yea verily been wrong for lo these many years. It ain't Bushmerica, it's Dickmerica. If you've been following up the postings from the Washington Post, otherwise known as the Day Late and a Dollar Short Gazette, you will know that Dick Cheney, and it all just, oh God, it makes so much sense looking back. How could you not just know it was happening? There's nothing secret here. He was acting true to form. The same guy that went to hunt clubs where they took captive nets full of hundreds of birds and turned them loose for him to fire scattershot into their poor, innocent, little, hopeless...
nasty it can be. I know what a brutal process it is, but I also love my country with all my heart. And that love of my country moves me to believe Dennis Kucinich when he says that he wants to help save this once great nation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dennis Kucinich said, "This is a serious matter, and I'm calling him on it." He was referring to John Edwards. "Whispering, trying to rig an election, then denying what's going on and making excuses. It all reflects a consistent lack of integrity." And it does. It does. You know, as a Democrat, I feel like we all benefit when we have more ideas in the electoral field. Interestingly, however, the only voice for what I consider to be the solution to our health care problem was excluded in Sunday's Lawyer Fest. And by that I mean universal single-payer health care in which profit is not part of the equation. Can you imagine a country that believes some fat cat insurance executive ought to be able to get rich off of people getting sick? That's what it is. That's what the current system is. It is fat cat insurance agents, insurance executives, insurance company shareholders getting obscenely wealthy off of the illness of their fellow human beings. That's right up there with drinking blood, as far as I'm concerned. It's also incredibly inefficient. There's not an insurance company out there that can boast of lower than 40 or 30% margins for their overhead. What do we run Medicare on? 1, 2, 3%, maybe 4? Not 34, 4%. And that is because we don't have to constantly be worrying about paying quarterly dividends on Medicare to shareholders. Although, you know, there are some people out there who, given the opportunity, would be more than glad to privatize Medicare and turn it over to the $20 billion Christmas bonus crowd. And that sickens me. That makes me pretty sure that we're on the road to an America that none of us listening and participating in this program, at least, would want to be part of. Are you invested in the market? I'm sure there are people out there who are invested in the market via one way or another, whether it's a pension plan or a 401k or a mutual fund. Did you ever look into your portfolio to find out whether or not you are invested in whole or in part in any healthcare companies? Insurance companies? Can you imagine, if you are, that you are participating in profiting from the illness of your fellow Americans? Woohoo! Somebody's got pneumonia! My quarterly dividend's gonna go up! Woohoo! Oh, there's a new disease out there. My pharmaceutical investments are gonna just go through the roof when we find the treatment for it. Woohoo! Wow. Kind of cannibalistic when you think about it that way, isn't it? Sure it is. Because more than anything else, the free market is predicated on our willingness to prey upon one another. What's that? Big outbreak of psoriasis? Well, I'm invested in a company that has a psoriasis drug. I'm gonna do well off this outbreak. What's that? Oh, high fructose corn syrup is being pointed to as a leading cause of the rise in diabetes in the United States. Woohoo! I'm well invested in companies working on diabetes research. I'm going to get rich off them diabetics while they're getting their legs hacked off. Yahoo! Hot diggity! It was Calvin Coolidge who said, "The business of America is business." Welcome to the 21st century, sunshine, where the business of America is illness. You want to participate in that? You want to be part of that? Does it make you feel good if you already are? Well, if that's the case, then, just sort of belay all that business I mentioned about Dennis Kucinich. Because you're going to like the Obama health plan. You're going to like the Clinton health plan. You're going to like the Edwards health plan, because there is an element of profit for people who enjoy making money off of sick people in all of those plans. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Just makes you want to go out and chew on some raw meat, doesn't it? But let's not let America know that there is an alternative, that there is a real plan that gets the blood lust profit out of America's healthcare system. Let's not tell anybody about that. Let's make sure that Dennis Kucinich can't appear in front of a whole bunch of trial lawyers and remind him of that. No, let's don't do that. Jesus, that plan for bringing Mike Gravel in to scream like a crazy man and create an excuse not to let anybody else in except, our kind of people. Damn, that thing worked well. And it worked pretty quickly, too. How far are we from the first primary, and they're already cutting out the sanity? They're already cutting out the populism? They're already cutting out the real liberalism? Because, after all, we can't be talking about issues in a way that actually means something to working men and women in this country. No, we can't do that. That's no good. So bless your heart, Dennis Kucinich. Bless your heart. Bless your heart for coming out and speaking the truth. Yeah, he kind of nailed them too, by the way. Dennis sent letters to both Senator Clinton and former Senator Edwards and challenged them both to one-on-one debates. You really want, and what he says, if you're truly seeking debates where there are fewer participants and where there's more meaningful and serious discourse, this is a great opportunity for us to join together in an open discussion on behalf of the American people. I'll take either one of you, one-on-one. And Jesus, he'd chop off both of their heads and hand them back on a platter. Well, not literally. Bad metaphor. He'd hand them their butts. This your butt? Oh, okay. Because sooner or later we have to have an honest conversation about how far this country is willing to go to satisfy the urges of the priests who sacrifice at the altar of mammon. Sooner or later we're going to have a discussion in this country about how much each and every one of us owes in illness to the shareholders of the insurance industry. How much do you owe? Do you owe a good bout of pneumonia to HCA? Do you owe a nice round with the flesh-eating bacteria to Big Pharma? Aren't you patriotic? Can't you get a little sicker? America needs you sick so you can help with the quarterly stock dividend, sunshine. Get out there and get sick, America. Patriotism demands it. Let's go to the phone. Susan's calling from Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
This is one of my hot buttons. Because there's a side effect to our gear for profit health insurance system that just really burns me. It's called the orphans. Orphan drugs, orphan diseases.
Sure.
If you have a little known or rare disease, or you need a rare type of drug for that type of thing that isn't, there isn't much call for it, they don't want to talk to you. They don't want to invest in.
Well, there's no money in it.
No money in it. Hello. So, guess what? Die.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can serve the state by dying too, because after all, do please remember that some of George Bush's better donors are heavily invested in the ownership of funeral homes.
Yeah, well, I've got news for the funeral, whoever gets me. Ha ha. Sorry, ain't gonna happen.
Going for the roaster, are you?
Yeah, in a cardboard box.
Well, if they'll let you do that, better
no,
double check your state laws.
Says you they have to let you. You cannot be compelled, or at least it used to. The Bushy may have repealed that law quietly. I don't know, but it used to be that they didn't have to tell you. But if you knew about it, you could be cremated that way, thereby saving yourself something like $10,000.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right in your initial premise, Susan. There are things that of course the other side of that argument is the profit-driven pharmaceutical industry, like orphan drugs are concerned. They'll say, well, you know, it's only because we have these highly expensive drugs that we can afford to produce these orphan drugs that not many people need.
Yeah, the thing is, they don't produce them. The only reason that they are found at all is sheer accident.
True. So,
and they are a long time coming.
So where do you fall on the issue locking Dennis Kucinich out of these things, this debate, this discussion?
I think it's obscene. And I said so from the minute the story broke. They don't have any right. Who appointed them? God.
Now, to be fair, Senator Clinton said it was all John Edwards' idea.
Oh, crap. I heard that recording just the same as everybody else did. Nobody was holding a gun to her head.
Well, it's just... I'm not going to sit here and weep or rend my garments or sit in sackcloth and ashes or anything, but it's a big blinking strobe light right over top of the fact that we don't want political discourse in America.
Yeah, and it's also a big blinking strobe light over these two candidates. If you want your country back, don't vote for these people.
It is that, but it's pointing, you know, there's let's be candid, Susan, not to say that we're not all the time, but what this is about is not FaceTime. This is about eliminating people who could potentially draw money away from a campaign.
Exactly.
I heard earlier today as we were driving about, did you know, and this is kind of a weird thing to hear, but, you know, this last quarterly earnings report, if you will, fundraising report for the political candidates is out. All the Republican candidates combined do not have the kind of money that Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton have.
Uh-huh. That tells me one thing.
The fix is in?
The fix is in, and all these conglomerates and the whole nine yards, K Street, the whole nine yards, they've dumped the Republicans. They're going with these Democrats, and these are the ones that are sold out.
Could be.
Of course, if mainstream
Democrats were listening to us, they'd say, you know, they're hurting the cause.
Oh, horse pucky. I'm being honest. If you get a look at their campaign finance reports when they finally do come out, you will find great big contributions from GE, Dow Chemical, Big Pharma, the whole nine yards, Reynolds Tobacco, you name it.
Sure.
Every one of them is sold out.
Now, I do understand, to be fair, that John Edwards is not taking that kind of money.
Well, that's fine and dandy, but John Edwards apparently doesn't have the morals of an alley cat.
I just wonder... I'm trying to piece this together in my mind as I go, Susan, so please bear with me. I wonder if he... Because I like John Edwards. I'm inclined to like John Edwards. I'm wondering if he's not a pawn in this, too. Because, see, if they can pare it down and get rid of Gravel and Kucinich and Dodd or Biden, they can keep pairing.
Mm-hmm. And then they'll turn on Edwards.
And eventually they will turn on Edwards.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he's not a pawn in this. I wonder if by his making a remark... You got to watch the video. You watched the video, right? I mean, you heard the audio, but did you see the video?
No, I didn't see the video.
Okay, Senator Clinton walks over to Edwards, and they're having this blah, 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 blah conversation, okay? Then the music dies down, and then it's, you know, have your guys, our guys should talk, okay?
In other words, Clinton initiated it.
She's the one that walked over to his podium.
How much do you want to bet she started the whole nine yards?
Well, what I'm trying to figure out here is who would have the connections to Patsy Mike Gravel into the contest? Because again, it's worth noting the problem with all this. It's not Dennis Kucinich screaming and raving. He hasn't screamed and raved. He just stands there and talks about issues honestly, yeah, straightforwardly, and has the answers.
Yeah, he just stands there and lays out facts.
It's Gravel that opens the door on closing the door, if you will.
Yeah.
And what I'd love to know, and I don't know, once upon a time I think it might have been possible to find this sort of thing out, where did Mike, you know, and he doesn't have much, but whatever money he has, where did it come from?
Mm-hmm.
Or who talked him in to getting into this race? Whose creature is Mike Gravel?
Well, I can think of a real good motive for him doing it.
Okay.
He's broke.
So he's trying to just raise some money for himself?
Basically, he's trying to keep his head above water, yeah.
If
he's offered a bunch of money to get a pseudo campaign going and torpedo some other people, what's he care?
Well, I'm sorry to be so paranoid, but it all makes perfect sense to me now. And until I am proved utterly and completely wrong on this, I'm going to continue with it, Susan. And the thing is, when I saw the article about the trial lawyers and, you know, the top five contenders, I guess the mail just doesn't reach Dennis Kucinich. I guess the phone doesn't ring at the Kucinich campaign headquarters. I guess email doesn't get to Dennis Kucinich because, you know, surely to goodness they would have invited him.
Yep.
Or maybe
unless they were told, you invite him, we don't come.
Precisely. And who?
And if they're pulling that kind of
a stunt. And who are we?
I would be willing to bet that they've reached an agreement to refuse to show up.
Who are they?
Probably Clinton and Edwards and possibly Obama.
You don't think Bill Richardson would be part of this? You don't think Biden would be part of it?
No.
Why not?
Because they're also on the hit list.
Now, to his credit, I guess, Edwards has said that he was misunderstood, that his plan would be for four people to be invited who were randomly selected.
Right.
Now, What if that was Biden, Dodd, Gravel, and Kucinich? Who's going to show up for that?
Right. And I will, exactly. If you believe that explanation, I've got a really nice buy on a bridge out here in out by Seattle. It's called Galloping Gertie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen
well,
the footage.
Well, probably you have to fish it out of Elliott Bay. But I'll sell it to you nonetheless.
I'm sure you would. I'm sure you would. Susan, so good to talk to you, dear.
You too.
You have a good evening.
You have a nice day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I don't mean to, look, I'm not trying to drive you away from the election. I'm not trying to drive you away from the process. I'm trying to point out a couple of things. One, it is a mercenary Machiavellian process. And two, it is a process that is absolutely polluted with money. Because, again, this isn't nearly, we're way the hell away from New Hampshire or Iowa or any of that. This is not about FaceTime. There are plenty of places for candidates to go and get their faces seen. I'm sure you can't swing a dead cat in New Hampshire and Iowa or in South Carolina right now without hitting somebody who wants to be president. On the other hand, however, it is about the money. And if real common sense solutions like national single-payer health care, getting profit out of health care in America, if real common sense solutions like ending the funding for the war and beginning the withdrawal now, which is the only common sense answer, if fair trade instead of free trade, common sense, begins to get traction, then those ideas will draw political money to where the ideas originated. And they didn't originate with Senator Clinton, and they didn't originate with Senator Obama, and they didn't originate with Senator Edwards, and they didn't originate with Senator Dodd, and they didn't originate with Senator Biden. Jesus, is it nothing but senators? Oh, Governor Richardson and Congressman Kucinich. Psst, by the way, have I mentioned lately that presidential candidates coming out of the Senate tend not to fare very well? Just mentioning. But yeah, it's about the money. It's about the money. It's about the money. Way, way, way back in the dim, dark mists of time, when some benighted institution allowed me to attend law school, it was jokingly said on the first day of the first semester of the first year of the first semester of the first class by one learned white-haired professor that there are three rules in the practice of law, and they are: one, get the money up front; two, get the money up front; and three, get the money up front. If you don't understand rule three, see rule one. It applies even more profoundly to the political process. Money, 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 money. And the more they raise, the more they are afraid. There's Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton going at each other hammer and tongs, $30 million apiece. And scared to death that they won't get another dollar. Because it is money. Do you ever wonder what political years do to American families? Now, I'm not concerned with the pharmaceutical executives and the healthcare executives and the Wall Street bankers and traders and brokers and so forth. They spend more in a day than you and I make in a year. But I am concerned about American families. When somebody sends $100 to one of these political candidates, what do they forego? See, I'll be honest with you. I think about this because, you know, we hung that PayPal button up at the website, just trying to keep this little effort on the air every night and every day. It's not just me. It's the whole network. And we're trying to make sure that we can raise a little over $1,000 a month so that we can meet the bills that are attendant upon doing all of this. Not talking about lobster canapés or trips to the Hamptons. We're talking about repair bills on equipment and paying an internet service provider. Okay? And I sat, and you know, our good friend Wayne can tell you that I agonized over it before I hung a button up, because the first thing in my mind
the first thing in my mind was, what if we are taking away from people something that they very, very badly need? I went through that analysis before I reached the conclusion that there was no other way to continue until we can expand and grow than to do this, than to invite you to participate and to share. I did that. I thought about it in terms $10 and $20 and $25 and what that buys on a working person's budget. Do you, in the American political process, do you suppose that that calculus is ever engaged by Senator Clinton? Do you suppose it's ever engaged by Barack Obama? Do you suppose it's ever engaged by John Edwards, by Chris Dodd, by Joe Biden, by Governor Richardson? Do you think it is? I don't know. I can't say one way or the other. I have my suspicions. Because when you're playing at that level of the atmosphere where the oxygen's really thin, just about the only person you worry about breathing is you, sunshine. You. See, I'm pretty sure, based on conversations that I've had with him, that Dennis Kucinich has engaged that calculus. Because Dennis Kucinich has been a man in his time who has not known where his next dollar was coming from. From a 20th century standpoint, Dennis is about the only guy who has anything resembling a log cabin story to tell. But I wonder, and cannot help but wonder, if the money and the concerns over the money in this political process, do they ever actually wonder where the pennies and the nickels and the dimes come from? Do they? Because I do. Jump right in. Long weekend. You might have some stuff on your mind. I want to hear it. 304-658-5912. This is the Head On Radio Network. The Horn, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
And he looks at her and says, hey, darling, I can remember when you could stop with love. Oh, but ain't that America? You and me, ain't that America? Something to see, baby, ain't that America? Home on the free, yeah. Little pink houses.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise. surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs name their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed lesbian Bible study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, like, thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't, and so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it?
Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to.
Did you receive an
minutes before the hour. I'm Bob. Welcome back to the program, even though you didn't go anywhere. Let's see. Program note for this evening. I inadvertently screwed up the entire day's schedule this morning. We had a consult. A consult? Oh, Jesus. I'm using weasel English. We had a doctor's appointment for our daughter to have her tonsils removed. And as a consequence of that, you know, for something like this, Agnes and I don't want to just take off and leave one of it. You know, it's, yeah, tonsillectomy, you know, you kind of need both parents. I mean, it wasn't the tonsillectomy, it was just the doctor's appointment, the consultation. So anyway, I sent this email out this morning saying we wouldn't be doing John or Joe's show live because we needed to, and I just sent it out within the network community. And I confused some people because I have no business writing emails before I've gotten a couple of good cups of decaf into me. And yeah, well, you know, what's that? Executives' Breakfast of Champions. Two pots of coffee and a half a pack of Marlboro Reds. That's me. So I used some imprecise language and made some people confused. And so as a consequence, I don't know at this point. I don't know if we're going to have Strictly Confidential live this evening because I think Peter was under the impression that we might be gone all day and both of us be away from the production facilities. So there will be something after the program. At this point, I'm not sure if it will be Peter Live or Peter Replay. So, you know, that's that. Now, tomorrow evening, no doubt about it, I will not be here. Everything else will be as is, with the exception possibly of John, who is still waiting for his, I think, still waiting for his new internet connection to get hot. But apart from that, Joe should be live. Mark should be live. Guy should be live. Peter should be live. Me, I'm going to be Memorex. I'm going to go down and attend a function with my good friends down at down in the Coal River Valley that is scheduled for tomorrow evening that I'm really excited about attending. So, you know, put it on the schedule. Please, as they say at the phone company, please make a note of it. But my apologies for screwing up the schedule today. For a guy who prides himself on communicating tolerably well from time to time, I really botched this one badly. And I'm sorry. I just apologize. I screwed up. And had no idea I was doing so at the time, which makes it even worse. But I was rather obtuse in my writing. Or what is it? What is it in Catch 22, Joseph Heller? Your prose is too prolix. I was engaging in prolix prose. So there's that. In the meantime, there is some stuff that I want to share with you this evening, and I do not have the ego to sit here and do that whole flush phlegm ball with one brain tied behind my back. Yeah. The most I'll say is that I have the heart of a conservative, and it's pickled in a jar on my desk. But I do want you to know, at least, when we get stuff right. Because frequently I get up at what for me are insane hours of the morning and start sending emails that ought not go out, and I get a lot of stuff wrong. So when I do get something right, I like very much the idea of letting you know about it. And one of those things I ran across earlier today at Huffington Post. You recall about, 2 weeks ago, was it? When the Employee Free Choice Act went ignominiously down to not even defeat, just a refusal to consider it, because the Republicans said they didn't, in the Senate, said they didn't want to hear any more about it, and Harry Reid said, well, that's fine by me. And allowed him to filibuster it without even so much as going up and saying, standing up in front of the Senate, and saying, we just wanted an up or down vote on employees' free choice. It's just the freedom of association. It's only the First Amendment. It's just the right of working people to band together and stand together and be together and form an association for a bargaining unit if they choose by a majority vote to do so. That's all we wanted, just an up or down vote. It was just an up or down vote. You know, just like the Repigs used to do. Now, this was a couple of weeks ago, right? I know several of you read the blog post. It was also posted over at opednews.com. Wonderful little site. Great little outlet for your creative urges. Now, stop that. Don't think that way. No, I'm talking about writing. Well, lo and behold, there's this this lady named Taylor Marsh. And over at Huffington Post today, she posted a thing called Dear Harry Reid. And it says, she writes, stop just showing up and do your job. Make the Republicans stand and filibuster. There's really no other way to say it. Reid and Senate Democrats are getting beat at every turn. They're calling Republicans obstructionists, but there's also another sad reality in this. Democrats are allowing it to happen. Now, if I was a little quicker on the draw, I'd find my post for you from a couple of weeks ago and let you see how similar that is. She notes, Chris Bowers wrote a tremendously useful post that lays it out. Campaign for America's Future did a report called Filibustered, outlining how the Republicans are doing their jobs while Reid and Senate Democrats stand feckless in the Senate well. I think I said something more along the lines of he keeps telling us about his dry powder but never about his sopping wet shorts. But, you know, I'm harsh and mean and nasty that way. But again, I like to tell you when we get things right. You literally heard it here first. And now, lo and behold, if he doesn't apologize first... By the way, glad to see, welcome to the bandwagon, Ms. Marsh. You write very well. The Young Turks got on the bandwagon, too. I'm just glad I was there to put the wheels on it. I'm glad that Bart Kopp's been hammering away at Harry Reid for a couple of years now. All the way back to when he was letting himself be run over by the Republican majority, and they'd say things like, "We'll engage the nuclear option," and Harry would soil himself and say, "Oh, Jesus, not the nuclear option!" There's a quote from the Young Turks talking to Senator Kent Conrad of, North Dakota? Yeah. And Conrad says, "I think there's a growing consensus that we ought to do that, namely actually make them filibuster. I think we could do a better job making our points, and one part of that is to let the American people just see how obstructionist this Republican minority is beating. The leader has had to file cloture now over 40 times already this year, and cloture, as you know, is a special procedure to stop debate, to stop filibusters, in order to reach conclusion on legislation. I had a Republican colleague tell me, he says, it is the Republican strategy to try to prevent any accomplishment of the Democratic Congress. That is said in their caucus openly and directly that they don't intend to allow Democrats to have any legislative successes, and they intend to do it by repeated filibuster." God Almighty. Still makes me sick when I think about Alito and Roberts and the bankruptcy bill and all the stuff we didn't stop in the United States Senate when we had a filibuster as a minority and didn't bother to, because they said, you know, we'll call you names. We'll call you liberals. We will. I promise we will call you liberals if you dare think. And then we'll take your filibuster away and we'll take you out in an alley and beat you to death with your filibuster. And we never, ever, you and me, we were madder than hell about it. But there seemed to be a little problem coming up with the nerve to stand up and fight back. But if you support so the idea now, it's being reported by, among others, Bob Geiger over at bobgeiger.com, G-E-I-G-E-R.com. He's reporting that Harry Reid, may have found a spine that nobody was using, and that he is going to invoke a rule in the Senate that will make the Republicans actually filibuster for up to 30 hours. Going to make the little bastards stand up and read the phone book. And that's fine. And he is going to hold the Senate in session all night long. And you know, this is going to be hard on the Republicans because they won't be able to get to their hookers. And I don't, you know, they may have already booked the time, and you know, you use it or lose it. And you know how these fiscal conservatives are, you know, no hooker left behind. Wonder if Tender Vitters will be there. You know, for one, you know, since they're going to have to stand there and read for 30 hours, those Depends might actually come in handy. You know, it's been done. I think it was the Republican head of the Alabama Senate a couple of years ago stood behind the podium and urinated to keep from having to hand over control or some such during some sort of similar debate. Oh, yeah, David Vitters, you may actually have something to offer to this debate. And it may be highly absorbent. But I'll be proud of Harry Reid if he stands up and actually does this. And I will praise him. Because I don't like just sitting here griping. I'd like to see us fight back and win.
Apparently, Senator Reid has even, I don't know, you think somebody might read a blog here and there? He's actually stood up and said, we're going to make them have an up or down, we just want them to have an up or down vote. This is a quote. Now, Republicans are using a filibuster to block us from even voting on an amendment that could bring the war to a responsible end. They're protecting the president rather than protecting our troops. They're denying us an up or down, yes or no, vote on the important issue our country faces. Now, not wanting to spend a great deal of time looking backward, I won't mention that it would have been nice to have had an up or down vote on employee free choice so that we could have seen the evilest of the evil Republicans come out, and we could have found ourselves probably some mugwump Democrats, too. Ben Nelson, Nebraska, Bueller. Yeah. We'd found ourselves. I'm sure we would have found some mugwumps hiding under Republican skirts. Oh, there I am back to that again. But good on you, Harry Reid. Let's see if you can follow through. Or if Mitch McConnell threatens to call you a liberal, will you wimp out and scurry away? Oh, shut up and go and change your armor. Reid is invoking the provisions of Rule 22, precedence of motions, of the standing rules of the Senate, which provides, at the majority leader's discretion, up to 30 hours of debate if a filibuster is initiated. And the Republicans will filibuster this because this has to do with ending the damned war. And the Republicans, for the most part, you know, that ignorant POS Jeff Sessions in Alabama and Jim Demented and Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham, who got his rear end handed to him yesterday on Press the Russert face this week with, yeah, whatever. Lindsey Graham, Jim Webb just wore him out. But Lindsey Graham will be, I don't believe that the Senate needs to macro manage the war. You shut up too, Lindsey Graham. Freak. But they'll all be there, and the thing is, you understand why they're filibustering this. They know that George Bush will veto it. That's not the problem. It's not like it's going to suddenly slip past the Senate and George is going to go, well, I'll be damned, I think I'll end the war now. They filibuster to keep from actually having to vote on it and have that vote recorded. They filibuster to keep from standing and being counted, because at the end of the day, Republicans are what Republicans always have been. Republicans are cowards. And you know that, and I know that. Time for the news. I hope you'll join in on the other side. 304-658-5912. 304-658-5912. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. A powerful earthquake shook the northwest coast of Japan this morning. The trembler caused a fire at a nuclear power plant that led to a spill of radioactive water into the sea. Thousands evacuated their homes. The 6.8 magnitude quake killed at least 8 and injured as many as 900. In Iraq, 2 suicide car bombings in Kirkuk killed as many as 85 and wounded another 180. In Baghdad, bombings killed 9. Marine General Peter Petraeus says the Joint Chiefs of Staff will turn in a report of their own to the President in September, separate from General Petraeus' anticipated report. According to the Associated Press, the Joint Chiefs could suggest several courses of action, one being another troop buildup. Some 8,000 troops have launched a new operation in Iraq aimed at clearing out al-Qaeda insurgents south of Baghdad. The early morning attacks are designed to halt the flow of weaponry and fighters infiltrating southern Baghdad. UN inspectors confirm North Korea has shut down its nuclear reactor. The move is the first step toward abandonment of Pyongyang's nuclear weaponry program. Six-party talks resume Wednesday. Northwest Pakistan, Islamic militants killed as many as 80 people in a weekend series of bombings. Al-Qaeda last week called for more attacks against the government after a troop siege on the Red Mosque. In a press conference today, President Bush announced a multilateral conference on Middle East peace to take place this fall. Israel, the Palestinian Authority, and neighboring governments will attend the meeting with Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. The UN says Albania has become the first nation to destroy its complete supply of chemical weapons. That includes 71 tons of mustard gas and other banned chemicals. In Washington, President Bush is meeting with Poland's president to discuss the proposed European missile shield. Also on the agenda is the continued deployment of 900 Polish troops in Iraq and 1,200 troops in Afghanistan. In Los Angeles, the Roman Catholic cardinal formally apologized to more than 500 alleged victims of priest sexual abuse. A $660 million settlement will be divided between those victims. It is the largest settlement thus far in the abuse scandal. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are coming up after this.
What are you doing?
Fertilizing the lawn. Do you want to help?
No, not really. But didn't you just do that last week?
Yeah, I did. I want the lawn to be really lush and green this year.
Dad, what happens when those sprinklers come on?
We give the grass a good long drink.
That water runs off with the fertilizer in it and gets into the bay, where it can harm the fish.
So what should I do?
Use just the minimum recommended amount. The lawn will be just as green and you'll be saving our ocean.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hello, I'm CHP Officer Felix Isararas. Law enforcement officers throughout the state are committed to removing drunk drivers from California roadways before they kill or injure themselves, or worse, an innocent victim. Right now, local law enforcement and the CHP are conducting DUI checkpoints to find drunk drivers and keep California roads safe.
Always designate a sober driver. And if you see a drunk driver on the road, call 911. A message from the Office of Traffic Safety and California Highway Patrol.
A joint project between U.S. and Canadian researchers has discovered a gene variant that can determine a child's risk of acquiring juvenile diabetes. The findings may improve doctors' ability to screen newborns for their propensity to develop the disease. The six medics sentenced to death in Libya on charges of infecting children with HIV have reached a deal that will free them. The Palestinian and Bulgarian medics were accused of starting an HIV epidemic in 1999, but HIV experts say it began before they even arrived in that country. China has stopped U.S. imports from seven top meat producers, accusing the companies of sending contaminated chicken and fish to Beijing. In recent weeks, China has been criticized for tainted exports to the U.S. of pet foods, toothpaste, toys, and pharmaceuticals. A landmark civil trial is underway in Alabama, the first to determine whether a U.S. company can be held liable for human rights abuses overseas. Drummond Coal Mining is accused of being responsible for the deaths of three union organizers in Colombia. And the International House of Pancakes is acquiring restaurant chain Applebee's for about $2.2 billion in cash. Light sweet crude is trading at $74.15 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended up 44 points at a new record high, 13,950. The NASDAQ closed down 10 and the S&P down 3. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Five past the hour. There it was again. Here. We're a little bit ahead of the curve here. We're just going to have to deal with it. We're just that cool. To wit, our good friends at QNN. I had a lovely conversation today on America Back on Track, by the way. You might hear that at some point on the 24/7 headonradionetwork.com stream. Also available at iTunes Radio, Receiva.com, and Phonostar.com. No, just we were talking about the Drummond Cole trial last week. It began Monday in Birmingham. I guess it's still underway. At some point, I hope to get plaintiff's counsel on the show, but I really don't want to mess with him in the middle of the trial. I think it's more important that these corporate thugs be brought to justice than and letting him focus on that for the time being. Kovalik is his name. Kovalik. Irish, I think. I kid. 6.5 minutes past the hour. Let's see. Where to go now? Oh, yeah, by the way, in the midst of discussing why the Senate Republicans might want to keep from actually having to vote on whether or not to bring the troops home on this latest bill coming out of the House of Representatives, could it be that there is potentially another reason? I've received this article already, and frankly, I'd seen it in a couple other places too, from a couple of listeners. Thanks to David and thanks to Lottie. The balance in the internal White House debate over Iran has shifted back in favor of military action before President George Bush leaves office in 18 months, the Guardian of the UK has learned. Wonder why that's not in the New York Times, Chicago Tribune. Wonder why that's not in, you get the idea. Wonder why that's not leading on CNN. Oh, wait a minute, there's some missing white woman somewhere probably, or maybe the shark ate somebody, or Paris Hilton had a cookie. Jesus. Maybe Sanjay Gupta needs to go out and whore for the pharmaceutical industry a little bit more. The shift follows an internal review involving the White House, the Pentagon, and the State Department over the last month. Although the Bush administration is in deep trouble over Iraq, I love the understated elegance of writing from the UK press, deep trouble over Iraq, it remains focused on Iran. Well, maybe that's why it's in deep trouble in Iraq. Maybe that's why we lost Afghanistan. Because they were in deep trouble in Afghanistan, and they remained focused on Iraq. Now they're in deep trouble in Iraq, and they remain focused on Iran. Really? It remains focused on Iran. A well-placed source in Washington said, quote, Bush is not going to leave office with Iran still in limbo. Jesus, I thought they were in Asia. The White House claims that Iran, whose influence in the Middle East has increased significantly over the last 6 years, is intent on building a nuclear weapon and is among insurgents in Iraq and Afghanistan. Yeah, that has been coming up for a while now, hasn't it? Obviously, this was an improvised explosive device that was manufactured in Iran. See there, in English, on the bottom of this fragment we found? Made in Iran! That proves it! Jesus. The Vice President, Dick Cheney, has long favored upping the threat of military action against Iran. He's being resisted by kind of sleazy Rice, as well as Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who came from a school in Texas that couldn't beat the Baylor Baptists, let alone the Baptists. Last year, Mr. Bush came down in favor of Ms. Rice. Now he's going down on Dick Cheney, or in favor of Dick Cheney. Nick Burns, the Undersecretary of State responsible for Iran and a career diplomat who is one of the main advocates of negotiation, told the meeting it was likely that diplomatic maneuvering would still be continuing in January 2009. That assessment went down badly with Mr. Cheney and Mr. Bush. Huh. They don't like that negotiating very much, do they? Quote, Cheney has limited capital left, but if he wanted to use all his capital on this one issue, he could still have an impact, said Patrick Cronin, the director of studies at the International Institute for Strategic Studies. Are we that far gone? Would we actually tolerate? And this is a question, not you and me. I mean, if it was up to us, we'd just go and, Dick, come here, over here, next to the microwave. Let's have a talk. And we'd convince him that bombing Iran was not the thing to do. But the American people, We've seen what happens, and we, the American people, you know, you, me, normal people, even as far as I can tell, some of the weirdos, anti-American weirdos who voted for Bush. Wait a minute, they're only mad at him over brown people. Oh, they might be up for a new war. You never can tell, can you? But would the American people sit still for George starting another war? Now, bear in mind, this is par for the course, right? What do you mean, Bob? Well, let me explain. Do you remember Pappy Bush, Bailout Bush, W's daddy? What did W's daddy do right before he left office? Nah, I'm not talking about pardoning Caspar Weinberger and all that stuff. He did that too. Oh, we have to talk about the pardon of someone else. I understand. It wasn't a pardon. It was a commutation. Now, just leave it alone. It's almost off the news screen. Nobody's talking about the commutation of Scooter Libby anymore. Bob, it's dead. Move on. Oh, no. The other thing that Poppy Bush did, and that was, well, that was the insertion of American troops into Somalia. Poppy Bush, if you recall correctly, and you will, tried to start a war in Somalia, the humanitarian. He had, what, less than 2-3 months to go in office when he sent American troops into Somalia that ultimately resulted in the story that included that of Black Hawk Down and the horrific deaths of several American soldiers. Bill Clinton did that. No, see, Poppy started that. And he sent him over there. You know, you'd think we'd learn. You would think we would learn. Sent him over there without adequate equipment. And as a consequence, you wind up with the Black Hawk Down scenario. And it's just pathetic. And American soldiers' bodies being dragged through the streets of Mogadishu. And handed, you know, and that was all handed off to Bill Clinton. Now, would George Bush do something dirty and filthy and underhanded like that? Would he? Yes, he would, sunshine. Once the November 2008 election was over, would George Bush start raining bombs on Tehran, on shopkeepers and vendors in Tehran, on children in playgrounds in Tehran? Sure he would! Now, interestingly, one of the statements in this story from The Guardian says, the red line is not in Iran. The red line is in Israel. If Israel is adamant it will attack, the U.S. will have to take decisive action, Mr. Cronin said. The choices are, tell Israel no, let Israel do the job, or do the job yourself. Dig this. Here's a statistic I had never seen before. Almost half of the U.S.'s 277 warships are stationed close to Iran, including two aircraft carrier groups. Well, that part we knew about. The aircraft carrier USS Enterprise rotated out of Virginia Beach last week, Norfolk, headed for the Gulf. It's supposed to replace the USS Nimitz. And the Pentagon says there will be no overlap, and that would mean three carriers in the Gulf at the same time. Dig that. You thought maybe just because it wasn't being talked about so much, just like I did, that maybe saner minds were prevailing. What the hell were we thinking? We're talking about the Bush White House, the Bush Pentagon, the Bush administration. There are no saner minds. It's a Fram commercial. Shall we bomb them now or shall we bomb them later? It's a Bugs Bunny cartoon. He does not have to bomb me now. He can take me home and bomb me later. There are no saner minds. Almost half of our Navy is near Iran. Why do you reckon that is? And I say again, Now, pardon me for just a moment while I play armchair risk game player, or better yet, Axis and Allies, or well, any of those old board games. Half of our Navy is near Iran? Iran has a bunch of undersea, near supersonic torpedoes that we can't stop, and half of our Navy is near Iran? I'm sorry. I'm trying to remember. I used to read Jane's Ships of the World and Jane's Defense Weekly once in a while. I used to read it, and there was this naval term for what happens when you put all your ships in one place. Oh yeah, stupid. Where's the? What is this? The Admiral from Pirates of Penzance is running the show in Washington now. Who told Admiral Numbnuts it was a good idea to put half the Navy in the Persian Gulf? I mean, call me crazy, but I got this thing called Google Earth, and I think the Google is just cool. And every now and then, I zoom in on the Persian Gulf and this little place called the Straits of Hormuz. Little itty-bitty neck of water. Sink 2 or 3, 4, 5, 6... ocean-going, tankers in it. You could bottle up half the United States Navy! Okay, maybe they're not all in the Persian Gulf. Maybe some of them are in the Indian Ocean. Half the United States Navy. Half of the U.S.'s 277 warships. Let's see, quick division, 2 into 2, 1, 10, 1, 10, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 7, 2, and 7, 3, 3 times 2. 130 some odd? Sorry, me and Jethro Bodine, we graduated 6th grade together. 130 some odd warships in striking distance of Iran. Is that just where we're taking our summer cruises now? No decision on military action is expected until next year. Nice. In the meantime, the State Department will continue to pursue the diplomatic route. Tell me I just feel really bizarre and halfway nauseated. I'm in the position of having to root for Condoleezza Rice. Woo! Mama, bring out the shine. I'm in a drinking mood. I'm rooting for Condi. Woo-hoo! Go figure. Half of the Navy is near Iran? Pearl Harbor comes to mind. I don't guess they're parked like they were at Pearl Harbor. At least with Pearl Harbor, we had the Hornet and the Wasp and the Enterprise out sailing around so they couldn't get the carriers. But, you know, we got two carrier battle groups. And a bunch of those guided missile cruisers that have beer cans for hulls. You know, because armor's so passe. We're going to protect them with missiles and chaff systems. Of course, the USS Cole was one of those, and it was blown to smithereens by a rubber boat with dynamite on it. Not a supersonic Iranian torpedo. No, not one of those. Rubber boat with some dynamite on it. You know, straight out of Warner Brothers. This is disturbing. This is a tough way to begin a week. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Mohammed Al-Baradei, a guy who has a very good track record of being right when George Bush is wrong, says that there are actually signs of Iran slowing down work on the enrichment plant that it's building in Natanz. The agency's deputy director general, Ali Heinonen, said 2 days of talks had produced good results with the Iranians and would continue. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. And meanwhile, taking a hard look at the map, you can see so much more to be really, really scared snotless about. How about Pakistan? How many more people blew up in Pakistan this week? Pakistan is coming unglued. Meanwhile, you won't find it in the New York Times, but if you go to the Asia Times out of India, you will find that there was congressional testimony in the last week or so that from Richard Boucher, no less, you know, him, testified, hand in the air, under oath, before Congress, we are paying $11 million a year, was it, or $110, something like that? I don't have the story with me. My Internet Explorer just died on me a couple of minutes ago. We're basically renting the Pakistani army to work on the Pakistan-Afghanistan border because we don't have enough troops of our own to work on the Afghanistan side, and we can't go into Pakistan. We are renting the Pakistani army. Meanwhile, General Pervez Musharraf, every day when he shaves, he gets real creepy with the razor. You know, it's like, eh, I don't like the, I don't know, this reminds me of something that's going to happen soon. God almighty. We're renting the Pakistani army because we can't get the job done in Afghanistan or Pakistan. And Pakistan's going to boil over. Did I mention that Pakistan has a bunch of nukes? And we think the Iranians are the crazy ones? No, no, no. The people who like Osama bin Laden are in Pakistan, and they would love to have their own little nuclear arsenal. There is a reason for you to be afraid. There is a reason for Michael Chertoff to absolutely be have a feeling in his guts that leaves him water-boweled. Sorry, can't leave the Department of Homeland Security office today. Can't get more than 15 feet from my bathroom because my bowels have turned to water because I got a gut feeling something bad's going to happen. You're damn right, Michael Chertoff, something bad's going to happen. It's going to happen in Pakistan. And then lots of stuff is going to go bang. And that ought to give you the night sweats. That's enough to bring somebody up out at 3 o'clock in the morning, bolt upright in the bed with a flop sweat just rolling off their forehead. Because those are the crazy people. Those are the fundamental. Those are the real bad crazy people. The real ugly fundamentalists. They're not in Iran. They're in Pakistan. They scare the bejesus out of the Iranians. They scare the bejesus out of the Afghans. They scare the bejesus out of the Indians. They scare everybody. Because we're being told that the Iranians want to have one nuclear bomb, and the minute they get one, they're going to be like Wile E. Coyote and just go drop it on Israel because they're nuts. They're crazy. Woohoo! Crazy. When in fact, Iran can't even refine its own oil and has to purchase gasoline and subsidize it with its own government money to keep it at low rates for the people there. When in fact, Iran, if anybody had, and you know, I think anybody who uses nuclear energy is kind of a dumbass anyway, but you know, if anybody's got a good reason for using nuclear energy, it's probably Iran. Sell the petroleum, use the nuke to power the country. Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? But no, it's Iran, because they're crazy. And they want to bomb Israel because, what's Barkup call him? I'm a hand job. Comes out and says something crazy every now and then George says something crazy, and the next thing you know, oil goes to the gasoline's $3.50 a gallon at the pump. God almighty, what a mess we're in.
What a mess we're in. And who made that mess? Who made that mess? Who ignored Pakistan while they were developing the bomb, Mr. A.Q. Khan? Why, that would be the first Bush administration. How do you like that? I'll be darned. Let's take a break. Lots of stuff yet to do this evening. Lots of stuff. But that just gives me the creeps. Half the Navy is in one place. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Let's go! Books fairly down the street with the people way down low. Ain't no sound but the sound of speech. Machine guns ready to go. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat? Out of the doorway, the bullets rip. To the sound of the beat, yeah. Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust, yeah.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any courses like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
I can see.
And again, I was talking about the Republican debate. So we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out to the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. Because that's what they are. Kick him in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
No, that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe radio show with your host, Joe Vecchio, the working man's thinking man. Moving to 11 a.m. to noon, June 18th, right here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue, that's you, logging on to wateruseitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
All our times have come. Here, but now they're gone. Seasons don't feel the rhythm. Do
All right, we're back. 29 before the hour. Half past this one. Halfway through tonight's edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And did you forget the phone number or something? 304-658-5912. 304-658-5912. It's easy enough, or, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I hear these things from email, via email. Sometimes you decide that you just would rather hear me flap my gums, which is fine by me, because God knows the more I flap now, the less that Agnes has to put up with later. So, in a way, it's kind of like giving Agnes some relief when I just sit here and run off from time to time. And God knows there's plenty to do. An email that I got from our good friend Teresa up in Canada. She says, "Don't get me wrong, Clinton and Edwards certainly showed their sleaziness. They also showed their stupidity, getting caught on tape. Idiots, not surprising, though. This Senator Mike Gravel, however, is really pissing me off. I heard him on Malloy the other night. I won't even start on that. Let's just say that Mike Malloy has the patience of Job." And it's tough, you know. One minute you think you're going to have a reasonable conversation, and the next thing, you know, the guy's talking about, you know, well, it's like something out of Donald Fagen's The Nightfly, that wonderful verse where the song is The Nightfly, and it's sung from the point of view of a guy who is an overnight jock radio guy. And he says, "So you say there's a race of men in the trees. You're for tough legislation. Thanks for calling. I wait all night for calls like these." You know, one minute you're having a rational conversation, and the next minute the guy's speaking East Martian, and you just feel like you've been left behind. I've had that happen. I can tell you precisely the last time it happened. Lieutenant Shine. One minute we're having this great conversation, the next minute I'm hearing that global warming is a conspiracy foisted on us by Al Gore, and I'm like, what? World just turned upside down, sorry. Anyway, Teresa says, "Now, thanks in part to Mr. Gravel, we are in danger of losing the valuable voice of Dennis Kucinich in some forums. Thanks for nothing, Gravel. One might be forgiven for thinking you are in the employ of the other side." Whew, I feel better now, says Teresa. I'm glad you do, dear. I'm glad you do. But while you say they're in the employ of the other side, politics is so upside down and sideways these days that I don't know. I mean, I know who the other side is. I mean, you know, the really evil people, the Mitt Romney, you know, pick one. McCain, crazy McCain, who blamed his poor showing in the polls on his gay sweaters that his staffers made him wear. Yeah, you heard that right. You heard that right. He blamed, not, you know, it had nothing to do with the fact that he pissed off his Republican base by, you know, not being mean enough to brown people from Mexico, even though 40% of illegal aliens come from somewhere besides Mexico: Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador, what have you. Yeah. Besides that, it was the gay sweaters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether it's Romney or McCain or Giuliani, Nosferatu, whatever. I rewatched that movie over the weekend with Willem Dafoe about the making of Nosferatu, and I swear, I think that Rudy Giuliani was the stunt double in that movie. So those are the evil people. Tom Tancredo, evil. Mike Huckabee, evil and stupid. What's his name? Dreyer from California. Is it Dreyer? I can't remember. The California member of the House. Stupid, evil, dumb. Fred Thompson. Dumb and pedophilic. Just, you know, evil. Rat Fink. Informer for the Nixon administration. You know, you get the idea. So I know who those evil bastards are. But I'm not so sure, you know, who benefits by closing out Dennis Kucinich's voice, by silencing Dennis Kucinich? Does the Republican side benefit? not directly, not at this stage of the process. The benefit happens on what is supposedly our side, and hence the, you know, I don't know, I'm having a hard time sorting out the evil without a program these days. Meanwhile, however, Ambassador Joseph Wilson has signed on and endorsed Senator Clinton. That just broke this afternoon, right before the show was going to air. And from the wonderful world of campaign money, from FT.com, the Financial Times, not exactly a liberal rag, John Mack, Morgan Stanley's chief executive, will invite senior staff of Morgan Stanley to a fundraiser for Senator Hillary Clinton on Monday. That would have been today. It happened today because this was published yesterday. In a pointed endorsement of the Democratic presidential hopeful from an important backer of President George W. Bush in 2004. So now it's Rupert Murdoch and John Mack. Are you disturbed by this? The minimum donation for the event is $1,000 per person. But Mr. Mack has urged those attending to give $4,600, which is the maximum for the 2008 presidential campaign. Now, Mr. Mack has been heavily courted by Senator Clinton, and it comes as a bit of a shock because Mr. Mack was one of those Rangers, not a Tonto, he was a Ranger for George W. Bush in 2004. That means he raised personally at least $200,000 for George W. Bush. And these people, Democrat or Republican, I come back to it again and again and again. What do these political donations mean to the rest of America? They're very good for the TV networks. They're very good for the TV stations. They're very good for the companies that do media ad buys. They're very good for the newspapers. They're very good for the printing shops. What do they do? What do these political contributions do in the lower ninth ward? What do they do in the Coal River Valley? What do they do where the stream turns the banks orange from the heavy metals leaching out of the water and into the stream beds? Not much. Not much. And so more and more and more, I mean, yeah, impeach Bush, yes, short-term goal. Do it now. Do it yesterday, please. End the war in Iraq, yes. But if you want to ever get to a point where we don't have to have these debates anymore about what comes first and what's more important, there's one thing that must happen, must happen, must happen, must happen, must happen. And that is the public financing of political campaigns. The John Mack money has got to be taken out of the process. Let everyone have an even playing field and let their ideas take the day. Is that too much? Is that just completely wacko, insane? That ideas should be more important in America than money? Then again, we get back to where we started the program this evening, don't we? Money is more important than your health. You need to be sick because the State Farm CEO needs to have a $20 million Christmas bonus. Diabetes setting in? Good for you. Because it'll be good for American business, because the only American business we've got left is the insurance industry and some small portion of the pharmaceutical industry. We can't outsource our hospitals, although, as has been noted a couple of times on this program, we can start, we can work harder and harder and harder to screw over the real healthcare providers, the nurses, the physician's assistants, the phlebotomists, the x-ray techs, the ultrasound techs, the MRI operators. We can screw them over left and right. And that's okay, and we can pay them less and less and less while we pay the CEOs of the hospital corporations more and more and more. And I would suggest, I guess because I'm just insane, that there is a direct correlation between big corporate political giving and big corporate getting its way. Once upon a time when this nation spoke a slightly simpler brand of English, that would have just been called bribery. And the people who took the bribes would have been thrown in prison. But now we have luncheons with them, and if you bribe them at a certain level, you get to call the politician your friend. Charming, ain't it? Not. Mr. Mack indicated in his email that the fundraising event for Senator Clinton was, quote, purely voluntary, unquote, and that Morgan Stanley employees remain free to give to any candidate or party they choose. Sure they do! He said, when it comes to supporting political candidates, I've always looked beyond party labels to the person who I felt was best for the job and most able to lead the country forward. I personally believe that person is Hillary Clinton. Wow. What this, according to the Financial Times article, Mr. Mack's shift to Senator Clinton means the balance of power among Wall Street chief executives has switched toward the Democrats in the 2008 presidential race. Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs, Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan, and Richard Fuld of Lehman Brothers have all tended to give to Democrats. And Hank Paulson, former Goldman Sachs chief executive, Stan O'Neill of Merrill Lynch, and Jimmy Kane of Bear Stearns were all big Bush fundraisers in 2004. Among her other supporters on Wall Street in the financial world, Mrs. Clinton counts Alan Patricoff, co-founder of Apax Partners, Stephen Ratner of Quadrangle Group, Thomas H. Lee of Lee Equity Partners, and Thomas Steyer of Farallon. Meanwhile, Mr. Obama has courted Wall Street support from hedge fund managers George Soros, Eric Mendich, Paul Tudor Jones, and Daniel Loeb. You got it figured out yet? Is it clear to you? I'm not trying to drive you away from the process. I'm really, really not. I would like to see us demand of these people that they give those millions back. Because, frankly, if you're taking money from Wall Street, it's on a par with taking money from, what, a Colombian drug lord? Yeah, it's about the same. Because Wall Street financiers, Wall Street bankers, hedge fund managers, and the like, have roughly the same morals. Actually, probably less than a Colombian drug lord. Well, I guess we can write off the big donation from Bear Stearns for the Head On Radio Network now, can't we? I did it again. This candor and this honesty is just going to be the end of me. But I mean, really. I mean, you watch. I think one of the reasons that people watch The Godfather and Godfather Part Two and never ever watch Godfather Part Three so much is because in that film there is an appealing morality Now, for all the killing and carrying on that goes on, and yeah, we're going to the blankets, we're going to the mattresses, whatever. Tell Michael it was only business. I always liked him. It was you, Fredo. It was you. For all, you know, for all the blood, for all the gore, for all the killing, for all the what appears to be amorality, there's actually a charming morality to it. You watch The Godfather, and it becomes pretty obvious that the people who need killing get killed. Right? Or is that just me? You know, the corrupt police captain, the members of the various families, Sonny. I mean, come on, Sonny needed killing. Sonny was an animal. But Wright, in its own odd way, within the framework of that film's universe, good triumphs over evil. And to a certain extent, among... what? Among the drug runners of South America that were featured on Miami Vice and the like, you know, they work within their own worlds. They buy themselves a police department. They half of the Mexican police is bought off, if not more. And all of this happens because, oh boy, and there's another show, because of the so-called war on drugs in the United States. But they operate in their own world. On the other hand, these Wall Street financiers, these Wall Street power brokers, these kings of the universe, as it were, they will do anything for a dollar. They will invest in something no matter how evil it is. Again, our top of the hour news in the second hour mentioned the Drummond Coal Company suit going on in Birmingham. This is a case where an American corporation got outside the confines of American law and decided to flout that fact. And so they hire armed right-wing mercenaries to kill off union leaders whose only job was to try to secure safe working conditions and whatever passes for decent benefits in Colombia for the people extracting that coal from the bowels of the earth and shipping it north because one air conditioner isn't enough in an apartment in Atlanta or Orlando or Mobile or Dallas or Houston or Jackson or Nashville or Wetumpka or Op or Rome. And so the Drummond Coal Company hired thugs just as 100 years ago the New River Coal Company, the Gauley Mountain Coal Company, all these various coal companies hired thugs from Baldwin Felt's Detective Agency and Pinkerton Detective Agency to come in and beat the piss out of coal miners who dared to stand on their own hind legs. And coal mine, you know, and that's the history that I know because that's the history around here. But it happened in railroad yards. It happened among Pullman car workers. It happened among textile workers. You see, what American corporations are doing, they never got away from that attitude. Their financiers never got away from that attitude. They just got caught and were compelled to stop when anybody was looking. But as quick as they could get outside the territorial confines of the United States, they reverted to their old ways. There was nothing new in what Drummond Coal Company was doing in Colombia. Drummond Coal Company was doing in Colombia what it did in the Alabama coal fields 100 years ago. If it was around 100 years ago. I'm not sure about the length of the lifespan of Drummond Coal. What Drummond Coal Company was doing in Colombia is nothing that Massey Coal Company would not do to West Virginians today if they thought nobody was looking. And as long as they're pulling it out of the ground and putting it on the world market, there's somebody on Wall Street who says, hey, boy, how much blood's on that coal? Just kidding. Don't give a damn how much blood's on that coal. You want some more money? And it's not just coal. It's pharmaceuticals. It's Colgate-Palmolive. It's Procter and Gamble. It's Chiquita Bananas. It's the shirt you buy that you think you're buying American made because it says made in USA, but it was actually made in the Marianas Protectorate by little Filipino girls who are chained to the sewing machine for 14 hours a day, and when they do get to go home, they have to whore themselves out because Tom DeLay pushed that through a few years ago. And you wonder why we encourage you to go to NoSweatShop.com. There's nothing that comes out of NoSweatShop.com that doesn't come with a guarantee that it has been made by union workers who have a stake in what they are doing, who are better paid than their non-union competitors, who in many instances are right here in the United States. And if they're not in the United States, they have verified the quality of the working conditions. Clothing you can put on your back and not wonder if you're doing something immoral, because that is the nature of our immoral world. You cannot be certain that you are not participating in evil just when you buy something anymore. What if the southeastern United States knew that Colombian coal, drenched in blood, was fueling their needs when they flipped the switch? What if they knew that leaving the TV and the lights on in the living room when they walked out of it made a little bit more likely the fact that some woman with 6 or 7 children would find herself in the morning a widow because her husband dared stand up and say, I want to be in a union? What would happen in America if we knew that kind of thing? What would happen in America if we had that level of awareness? I'm afraid of the answer. Because I'm not so sure about the morality of my brother and sister Americans anymore. Because they are debt slaves. And they live in fear. Our politicians, our Democratic politicians with whom we are frequently so dismayed, dismay us because they operate from fear. And our fellow Americans dismay us because they live in fear. They can't occupy Washington. They can't march on Washington. They can't miss work because then they'll lose their job. There goes the home. There goes the car. There goes the boat. There goes the college fund. There goes everything. There isn't any college fund. There isn't any savings. In most instances, there isn't a portfolio. So I don't know what would happen if people in Atlanta or Savannah knew what it meant when they leave the lights on. I don't know if folks in New York City understand what it means when a former ranger for George Bush gets in behind Senator Clinton. And here, let me be clear. I don't know if I know what that means either. But to kind of get chummy with Michael Chertoff, I know what it makes my gut feel like. Makes me feel like we've been sold. You, me, all of us. It makes me feel like we have been sold the hell out. And it hurts, and it's depressing, and I've done it again. I don't mean to be a bummer. But maybe it's not me that's the bummer. Maybe it's the circumstances around me, around you, around us. Maybe sometimes it does seem kind of hopeless. You know, I remember Bill Clinton talking about a place called hope. And I remember buying into it. And feeling pretty good about it. And I still think Bill Clinton was better than he was worse. He tried to do the right thing most of the time. We have a government now that doesn't try to do the right thing most of the time. We have a political process where you have to whore yourself out to people who used to support George Bush's Rangers.
So I hear the voices, but I'm the decider.
Mm-hmm. It's just frustrating. It's very frustrating. All right, then. It's time for the news. I need a break. I've filibobstered long enough. We'll hear the news and find out what else we're ahead of the curve on. Hey, by the way, you remember... I'm sorry. I was just going to ask you, do you remember when way back with, several different shootings in New York City where the cops blew away some poor dude, usually a matter of LWB, living while black. And there'd be like 19 bullets in the guy's body, and the cops would have fired 60 rounds. I can go one worse for you. And we will when we come back, because this is a happy place. It's a joyful place. It's sunshiny. Somebody play the Teletubbies music. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
As a horse, but everything is spinning. And if I use a gun, I'm sure to go to prison. I'm stubborn as a mule, and nobody breaks my rules. But nothing comes my way. Pair of shoulders. I got a love you can't imagine. Yeah, and what I got, I double. I swear I'm keeping out of trouble. I'm looking for one new value. I'm looking for one new value, but nothing comes my way.
This is the Quality News Network. Marine General Peter Pace says the U.S. military is considering new strategies in Iraq, including the possibility of sending in an even bigger troop surge. Pace says the Joint Chiefs of Staff are preparing a report separate from the evaluation expected from the commander in charge in Iraq. In Washington, Senate Democratic leader Harry Reid says he'll force an all-night debate on the Iraq war ahead of Wednesday's vote on whether to bring U.S. combat troops home by next April. In Iraq, two suicide car bombings today in Kirkuk killed as many as 85 and wounded another 180. In Baghdad, bombings killed 9. Some 8,000 troops have launched a new operation in Iraq aimed at clearing out al-Qaeda insurgents south of Baghdad. A powerful earthquake shook the northwest coast of Japan this morning. The trembler caused a fire and radioactive water spill at a nuclear power plant. The 6.8 magnitude quake killed at least 8 and injured as many as 900. UN inspectors confirm North Korea has shut down its nuclear reactor. The move is the first step toward abandonment of Pyongyang's nuclear weaponry program. Six-party talks resume Wednesday. In northwest Pakistan, Islamic militants killed as many as 80 people in a series of bombings over the weekend. Al-Qaeda called for attacks against the government after last week's troop siege of the Red Mosque ordered by President Pervez Musharraf. In a press conference today, President Bush announced a multilateral conference on Middle East peace to take place this fall with Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice at the helm. The UN says Albania has become the first nation to destroy its complete supply of chemical weapons, including tons of mustard gas. In Washington, President Bush is meeting with Poland's president to discuss the proposed European-U.S. missile shield. In Los Angeles, a Roman Catholic cardinal formally apologized to more than 500 people who say they were victims of priest sexual abuse. A $660 million settlement will be divided amongst the plaintiffs. It's the largest settlement thus far in the abuse scandal. And a man who entered the Colorado Capitol building with a gun was shot and killed when he refused to drop the weapon. Outside the governor's office, just before he was shot, he was yelling, quote, "I'm the emperor. I'm here to take over the state government." Authorities have no ID or motive yet. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
China has stopped U.S. imports from 7 top meat producers, accusing the companies of sending contaminated chicken and fish to Beijing. In recent weeks, China has been criticized for tainted exports to the U.S. of pet foods, toothpaste, toys, and pharmaceuticals. For the first time, Portuguese women will be permitted to obtain legal abortions. The new law sets a 3-day waiting period and permits doctors to refuse to participate on moral grounds. This morning, Washington State commuters began using the new Tacoma Narrows Bridge, which opened Sunday. It's the nation's longest suspension bridge to be built in the past 40 years. It's expected to handle more than 90,000 vehicles daily. A landmark civil trial is underway in Alabama, the first to determine whether a U.S. company can be held liable for human rights abuses overseas. Drummond Coal Mining is accused of being responsible for the deaths of 3 union organizers in Columbia. The Lundberg survey says U.S. gasoline costs rose 6 cents in the past 3 weeks to an average of $3.06 a gallon for regular. Last week, crude is trading at $74.15 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended up 44 points at a new record high, 13,950. The NASDAQ closed down 10 and the S&P closed down 3. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
5 past and 1 more hour to go. And, well, let's go to the phones. Enough screwing around. By the way, did I mention that half the United States Navy is somewhere near Iran? Geniuses. Somebody got out of the... somebody got out of the Naval Academy and is doing that. Recall his diploma, would you? Let's talk to David up in Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's going all right. But have you ever seen Deadwood?
I think so, but it would have been not enough to remember it.
Not enough to remember it? Well, anyways, that show helps me understand the United States psyche a bit more.
Okay. Oh, I thought you meant no. The TV show? No, I don't know.
Yeah,
no HBO.
Deadwood. There's a character in there that reminds me completely of Lindsey Graham.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They elected him mayor of the city of Deadwood because they needed, you know, they needed a prop mayor. So he's like a prop senator. And I recommend it. If you find some Deadwood links, I'd check it out.
Okay, I will.
It's too bad that HBO canceled it, but I can understand why. It was a costly show. The sets were amazing. I mean, the dialogue, Bob, if you're a real fan of Victorian dialogue and stuff, it's like, I mean, I can't say enough about the show. The characters, it's just, but not for kids. No.
Well,
not
see,
for
that's,
kids.
That's the thing. The TV, it's almost impossible to watch not for kids TV around here.
Yeah, well, you know, that's why. Those portable media players come in where you can just look.
Yeah, but I gotta go somewhere that I can, you know, power one with solar and, you know,
yeah.
and run have the solar reflector out in the sunshine and me back in a cave somewhere where I can't be found. I mean, I was watching heavy metal the other morning.
Oh yeah.
And I thought it was going to be safe. Hey, Dad, see? What you doing? Right in the middle of the Harry Canyon segment. Turn around, go on.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know what to do in a situation like that. I guess just watch Teletubbies.
and
the Shirt Tails.
Oh, and the Shirt Tails. Don't forget Veggie Tails.
Well, you know, my theory, the Shirt Tails was actually a leftist political cartoon because they were always. You know, the zookeeper was always trying to keep them in check, and he was like the right wing authoritarian. And the Shirt Tails, they wanted to leave the zoo and help the world and help the people. But anyway, you know,
and you know, Paul was walking barefoot and he was out of step.
There's probably some right wing organization saying the Shirt Tails. I never thought of that.
Well, hey, look, we're ahead of the curve on this program, David. I mean,
yeah,
2 weeks from now, we'll be having a story about, you know, James Dobson coming out after the Shirt Tails.
I know. I called for something else though, not the Shirt Tails. I actually called. Did you hear about this story, this earthquake in Japan?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, did you hear about any of the details on it?
No.
All right, we'll check this one out. This is a report that just happened. I mean, I think it just came in around 4 o'clock. A strong earthquake shook Japan's northwest coast Monday, setting off a fire at the world's most powerful nuclear power plant and causing a reactor to spill.
That I saw, yeah. They had a water discharge.
Right. 315 gallons.
I wonder if it was glowing.
I don't know, and they said that's not a significant amount. Say what?
Nah, it's just 315 gallons of it.
I mean,
you know, I worry though. When I first saw the report of the earthquake, my Japanese geography is not that good, but I was worried about our good friend Robert over there.
Yeah, that's what I thought of too. I was wondering if Robert would, if Robert's around, maybe call later on this week and give us a kind of update on it. Because all I know is that the water went into the sea, 315 gallons, and the official said, that's not a significant amount. That's a millionth of a radioactivity or whatever they...
Yeah, it'll all just dissipate when it gets into the
sea.
Yeah,
there's nothing to worry about, because the official said...
Nothing to see here. Keep on moving. Nothing going on.
You know, that's really where we're at. If an official says something, people will quote that and go, but an official said it, so I don't know why you're worried. Stop with your conspiracy theories or whatever.
Precisely.
And... You know, it's like what you say with what's happening with Iran and all of that. I don't know. It definitely looks like somebody wants to set off fireworks somewhere now, doesn't it?
Well, Cheney's itching for it. I mean, that Guardian article seems to make it pretty clear that he's out there working hot and heavy to bomb the snot out of Iran. And, you know, what makes me sick out of it, I guess, is, you know, A, it's evil. B... it's solely for political gain, because I think by now Dick Cheney understands that the only thing that has ever done any good at all for his erstwhile or his you know supposed boss is a disaster.
Mm.
you know, Bush went from 39% to 93% from September 10th to September 12th, 2001. And he, you know, we just loved when he started the war. See, the American people are kind of dim that way, if you want to get right down to it, David. We love the, and I'm not saying anything new. Mark Twain observed this, you know, 110, 115, 120 years ago. We go in big for the front end of a war.
Right.
Not so much on the back end.
I mean, it's too time consuming and takes too much of, you know, the American Idol competitions.
Well, we also find out what a brutal non-idealistic business it is.
Well, you know, Bob, this brings an interesting point that when it comes to the issue of war, and I hope people realize this, you can't have soft gloves on this anymore. You have to have iron gloves, and there has to be penalties up the wazoo if somebody commits this. If it isn't, and I don't even know why we're even debating or discussing this, because it's going to happen again and again and again. We need to put, like, our own war constitution, like, set in stone. You know what I mean? Of all the amendments that we want, if this happens and you commit this felony, this will happen to you.
Yeah, sure.
But you see, the problem is we can't do that, because then we wouldn't have much of a manipulative political system, because people would be sitting in the office and they'd be like, I guess we could do that, but if we do that, this is what's going to happen. We really, and another thing is, we really need to take away a lot of lawyer and corporate protection and stop dilly-dallying around that issue. Otherwise,
well, I've argued for a long, long time now, David, for what I call a corporate death penalty. Now, last week... No, I think corporations should be legally killed. Not the people in the corporations, just the corporations. Just kill it. And farm out all of its little business segments to other companies that can theoretically operate in an ethical and non-criminal manner. Just last week, I saw a story, and somehow or another it slid past me in the stack. The University of... And I don't... you're probably not a big sports fan, but... the University of Oklahoma, the Sooners, got busted last week. Stone cold busted for failing to supervise its players who had, imagine this, it's the University of Oklahoma, Barry Switzer U. And they got caught letting their players go out and work on so-called jobs that were actually just dummy covers for giving the player, you know, paying the players to play there. Three players got busted. The NCAA came in, and immediately, upon the investigation, told the University of Oklahoma that it was going to have to forfeit all of its wins from the 2005 season. Suddenly, in the record books, Oklahoma went 0-12.
Wow.
Okay? That's how quickly that penalty was imposed. We work harder to... And okay, understand, should have happened. It was the right decision, it seems to me. But the point here, David, is that we work harder to investigate corruption inside college athletics than we do to investigate corruption inside the government that is intimately associated with our day-to-day lives.
Well, you know, this is the predicament. I mean, this is what Lionel was saying on the radio. There is no penalties or any type
consequences.
Yeah, consequences or demerits or whatever. If you say something on the radio that is technically not true, or you know it not to be true, and again, this is a big issue, because if I had some kind of power in the media, I would definitely issue, just again, penalties everywhere for
people.
Well,
but there's a difference, David. There's a difference between unintentionally wrong and telling deliberate falsehoods. And I think it applies in politics, advertising, radio commentary. If I pride myself, if I get something wrong, I will gladly come out and say I was wrong, because I am an incredibly fallible person.
If
I unintentionally screwed up our entire broadcast day today and didn't even mean to.
Right. If Bill O'Reilly was if these rules applied to him, he would be out the first.
Oh,
first
Limbaugh
year
would be
war.
Broke. If you if you penalized Limbaugh by the lie, he would be a pauper. He would be, you know, he would be standing on a street corner saying, you know, we'll lie for Oxy. Yeah, it's.
But at the same time, I mean, it's like those people in the booth and the people who are just there have to check. They have to realize how fake and phony this is, and they're playing these little I gotcha games. We can play these mega I gotcha games as soon as you give us the megaphone. You want to play I gotcha? All right, let's play I gotcha.
Well, see, and that's why they hate people like the Center for American Progress and Media Matters for America, because they get caught on it. You know, they're sitting there. They've got the funding and the technology to sit there and pay somebody every day to listen to 3 hours of Rush Limbaugh and bust him and hang the evidence up there in his own words with his own soundbite, and it applies to O'Reilly and Bortz and Savage and all those creepy bastards. And that's why they did, you know, oh, these are George Soros funded. You know, they can't, all of, you know, whether it's Bortz or Limbaugh or anybody, they never come out and say, you know, they got the clip wrong, because they don't get the clip wrong. They busted him, and that's why they despise him. And so to the extent that we can't have a penalty for it, no, but we can have an organization like Media Matters or Center for American Progress out there calling them on it. And the funny thing is, left-wing talkers, we don't mind being told we were wrong. If we get it wrong, we say, oops, got it wrong, and apologize. But we don't sit there and run from it, because what we're about is facts. We're about, oh God, I hate this word a little bit, the truth, because the truth is so frequently fluid.
Right.
But we're about getting the facts right, because the audience that listens to this kind of stuff, David, is so many miles and miles and miles beyond the average ditto freak. These aren't marching orders. These are discussion points.
I agree with you there, and I think another big problem though is that when you have a business mentality, and you can tell when you talk to someone, They're concerned about the theme of the bottom line and target audience, and again, it just doesn't think of it as a person as a person. It thinks of it as a drone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really dangerous, and you can see the consequences all around you in everything, the way it's marketed, the way it's advertised, the way it affects your children. It's like a syringe that's been just totally permeated through our whole. The United States, just like some places have been, there are some pockets, but what I mean is the vaccination is complete in there. You can see it, you know, it's around, it's like I said, it's around you all the time. Like, well, I used to go to this restaurant, and I don't go in there anymore, because you know why, Bob? They had five TVs, and they were all on Fox News or CNN or MSNBC. They were all watching the same thing, and I was like, this is too creepy. I can't eat it.
Hey, by the way, you conjured our good friend Robert, David.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, just got an email.
Well, I'm going to let him talk now.
Oh, no. He's not on the phone. He just sent an email.
Oh, okay.
He says he just wanted to say hi, that there are no problems for him and his down in Kyushu. He says Kyushu is the only island in Japan with no fault lines, so no major quakes there. As far as the toxic leak is concerned, he says, it looks like I'll be laying off the sushi for a while. He says, but being that I'm swimming in toxic material, be it pesticides, pollutants, whatever, no matter where I live, I guess it doesn't matter so much.
One more thing before I go.
Yeah, sure.
There's a program on PBS on Nova about one guy trying to save the species of the turtles.
Uh-huh.
And I think people should check that out.
That's tonight?
Yeah.
Okay, what, 9 Eastern?
Or 9 Eastern, or I think it's Tuesday. It might be Monday or Tuesday. I'll let you know, and I'll shoot you an email on it. You can
okay.
hear
good deal.
Other listeners.
All right. Thanks, David.
All right. You take care, Bob.
All right. Bye now.
Later.
See, I get the idea that whether it's Mike corrects himself constantly. Sam Cedar used to do that, too, back in his Air America days. Tom will correct himself. Randy will correct herself or be corrected sometimes. Don't know so much about Lionel, but it's been my experience that most people who do talk from the progressive side of the aisle want to get stuff right. And don't sit there, but if you ever hear, well, The classic example was Bortz, the Bortz clip that we played last week of him with that caller saying, you know, I don't recall Bill Clinton ever being convicted of anything. Well, you're wrong. He was. And he just sits there and goes off and lies. Because facts and truth don't matter to these people because they're not in the fact and truth business. They're in the business of getting a certain segment of the population to do the bidding of the corporations, because whether it's Limbaugh, Hannity, O'Reilly, Bortz, Savage, any of these freaks, they're generally not, and in fact Bortz will go so far as to just wear the hell out of the religious right sometimes, they're not interested in advancing the right-wing religious dogma, mostly because they're a bunch of Kinkensteins, who, if they got caught, would put the religious right off of its oatmeal for a couple of weeks. But they are interested in advancing the right-wing corporate ideology. And so, because they're taken for gospel, and because they'll bluster and obfuscate and scream their way through getting caught dead out in a lie, they don't worry about it. Because you know what? They're going to get paid the next day, no matter what. What's that great line from WKRP where Johnny says, "Yeah, you just get behind the microphone and do it, and then every Thursday, whether you need it or not, somebody comes in and gives you a check for $38. That's pretty much right-wing talk radio. Say anything you want to. Be Glenn Beck. Say that you want to murder Michael Moore on the air. Say that you want to kill Hillary Clinton on the air. It's okay. Because every Thursday, whether you need it or not, some executive from CNN and maybe Premier Radio Networks or what the hell ever is going to come in and give you a check for $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 or $50,000 just for getting on the air and lying your rotten ass off. Whew, what a business. What a business. But I'm terribly glad to know that our good friend Robert is okay in Japan, him and his and the folks around him. You know, the heart breaks when you think about 8 people dead in an earthquake, or 80 or 800. Now, I mentioned something going into the news, and I am going to make sure that you don't go away this evening without hearing it. Like I mentioned, you know, the shooting stories from cops blowing away guys who they suspected of LWB, Living While Black, Amadou Diallo, Abner Louima, the guys leaving that bachelor party a few months ago. You know, hundreds of bullets fired, hit them 9 or 10 times. Kind of makes you wonder about the marksmanship of the cops there in New York. Well, we've got a bigger marksmanship problem. Here's a statistic for you. For every so-called insurgent they have killed, the American military has fired 250,000 rounds. Hello? Did you catch that? Did you hear that, Agnes? It takes 250,000 rounds of ammunition to kill a single so-called insurgent. A new government report says that U.S. forces are running through 1.8 billion, with a B, billion rounds of small arms ammo per year. And by small arms, they mean, what, M16s, 9mm Beretta, I guess shotgun rounds, that kind of stuff. What, 7.62 by 55? Is that the M16 round? 1.8 billion rounds of small arms ammunition. That figure has more than doubled in 5 years. This is the quote. The Department of Defense's increased requirements for small and medium caliber ammunitions have largely been driven by increased weapons training requirements, dictated by the Army's transformation to a more self-sustaining and lethal force, which was accelerated after the attacks of 11 September 2001, and by the deployment of forces to conduct recent U.S. military actions in Afghanistan and Iraq. T'was Brillig and the Swivey Toad did Geyer and Gimble in the wave, all Nimsy were the Borgroves, and the Mone Raps outgraped, said the report by the General Accounting Office. It takes 250,000... I don't think you can fit 250,000 bullet holes into an insurgent. Oh, well, come on. Bob, you know, that's just statistics. Yeah, I know. Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. But it's so bad now. It is so bad now that American ammunition makers can't keep up with demand. We can't make enough bullets to kill Iraq. So who have we turned to? Who can keep up with our demand for bullets for killing, you know, men, women, and children of Arabic descent? What? The Israelis can. That's who. Yep. We are now importing our bullets from Israel. Because Israel can turn out bullets like Carter turned out little liver pills. Senior officials have recently claimed great successes in Iraq based on counting the bodies of insurgents killed. Oh, we're counting them now. Major General Rick Lynch, I'd change the name, Rick, the top U.S. military spokesman in Iraq, said 1,534 insurgents had been seized or killed in recent operations in the west of Baghdad. Other estimates from military officials suggest that at least 20,000 insurgents have been killed in President George Bush's war on terror. Yeah, okay. John Pike, director of the Washington Military Research Group, GlobalSecurity.org, said that based on the GAO's figures, U.S. forces had expended around 6 billion bullets. 6 billion bullets. Wow, between 2002 and 2005. How many evildoers have we sent to their maker using bullets rather than bombs? I don't know. If they don't do body counts, how can I? But using these figures, it works out at around 300,000 bullets per insurgent. Let's round that down to 250,000 so that we are underestimating. My God. My God. Kind of makes your eyes roll back in your head and the tears well up in the little ducts there, doesn't it? Though millions of dollars have been spent on upgrading the facilities of the three government-owned contractor-operated plants that produce small and medium-caliber ammunition built in 1941... they remain unable to meet current munitions needs in their current state. Now, just kind of let that one grab hold of you and shake you about a little bit. Three munitions plants that were built to manufacture small arms ammunition for the Second World War. The whole Second World War, you know, our side, cannot supply enough bullets to kill enough Iraqis as fast as we want to. Lord God. The government-owned plant producing small-caliber ammunition cannot meet the increased requirements even with modernization efforts. A report in Manufacturing and Technology News said that the Pentagon eventually found two producers capable of meeting its requirements. One of them was the U.S. firm Olin Winchester. The other was Israel Military Industries, an Israeli ammunition manufacturer linked to the Israeli government, which produces the bulk of weapons and ordnance for the Israeli Defense Force. Jesus Christ, I hope this story does not get out in the Middle East. The Israelis are making bullets to kill the Arabs.
the Israelis are making the bullets the U.S. uses to kill Arabs. The Israelis are making the bullets the U.S. uses to kill Arabs. Hey, Michael Chertoff, you want a little milk of magnesia? How's that gut feeling, buddy? Of course, I'm probably a heretic or a left-wing commie pinko for pointing out the fact that buying bullets to kill Arabs with from the Israelis might not be such a damn good idea. Oh, but I remember when it was real funny, because we was going to go and take over Iraq, and we was going to grease our bullets with pig fat. Remember that? Because, what's the Muslim, the Arabic word there, pork is not halal, or is halal, forbidden. But I remember right wing so-called comics talking about, we'll bomb the Arabs with bacon and ham. No, we're just going to blow their brains out with bullets the Israelis made. this is wrong. This is disgusting on about six dozen levels. This is another one of those onions. Layer after layer after layer of wrong. It's wrong that if we get ourselves into a shooting war, we can't seem to manufacture enough bullets to get the job done. Wonder what happened to our bullet manufacturing. Liberals put the bullet manufacturers out of business. It was the liberals. I was checking with the NRA site the other day. They said it was the liberals. That's why we can't manufacture enough bullets. Christ Almighty. Makes your eyes cross. It does. We can't manufacture our own bullets. And when we need someone to manufacture our bullets, we turn to the people of all the people on the earth who we should not be buying bullets from for going and killing Arabs. Oh, Osama's just going to love this one. This is the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. A little discussed aspect of immigration concerns visas for skilled workers in the math and sciences. Jesse Russell looks at the impact of recent immigration caps in these fields.
When a teacher in Houston, Texas, recently found herself out of a H-1B visa due to a cap that limits foreign skilled workers to $65,000 per year, immigration attorney Maria Cordon filed for an exemption. Demand for the visas increase year after year, even as congressional caps on visas get smaller and smaller. Due to a shortage of U.S. workers in math and sciences, workers and businesses are increasing the demand to increase cap limits. Cordone said that due to the poor pay skilled teachers receive, less and less Americans in that field are taking on those jobs.
Can't find math teachers, can't find science teachers, because the occupation is not paid too well.
Cordone said one of the problems is that Congress is listening to the will of the public, who are mostly uninformed about skilled immigration. She suggested the best way to change minds is through education by publishing the visa regulations and allowing public comment.
If you have regulations published, you give everybody, the U.S. public, an opportunity to comment on the regulations or the proposed regulations before they get enacted into law.
SEIU's United Healthcare West local in California is endorsing Representative John Conyers' single-payer universal health care bill in Congress. The 140,000-member SEIU local says, like every other industrialized nation, the U.S. should provide health security for its residents as a matter of basic human dignity. The Conyers bill would cover everyone in the U.S. for all medically necessary care based on expanding the Medicare model. Pride at Work, the AFL-CIO's gay, lesbian, transgendered, and bisexual constituency group, is calling on UPS to reverse its decision to deny health benefits coverage to same-sex couples under New Jersey's civil unions law. UPS denied the benefits to two members of the Teamsters and their families. Pride at Work says the state legislature in New Jersey needs to give same-sex couples full marriage rights and scrap the civil unions system.
Here is today's economic report. American workers are on drugs. A new study from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration finds that 1 in 12 Americans has admitted to taking illegal drugs in the past month. The highest rate is with restaurant workers, where more than 17% admitted to taking illegal drugs, followed by construction workers at 15%. The most common drug used is marijuana. The most common age group to use drugs is 18 to 25-year-olds.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey, Rush, Hannity, O'Reilly, Forts, check this out. Look how easy this is. I was wrong. I messed up. Sitting here cruising along, talking about guns, trying to act like I know something about guns, and I mentioned a 7.62 millimeter round. No. Bob, wrong. Of course, bless his heart, our good friend the Cossack was at the ready to help me get straightened up in the chat room. Chat room's a handy thing. Never been by. You should go. Head on radionetwork.com. Just click on chat room. It's free. It's easy. And as our good friend Peter is wont to say, as well as our good friend Joe Vecchio is wont to say, some of the funnest, most smartest people in the world right there in the headonradionetwork.com chat room. Now, an M16 round is a 5.56 millimeter round. It's basically a glorified 22. Now, ask any good West Virginia hunter. You don't want, unless you're really, really a dead-on shot, you don't want to go hunting with a 22. That's what your 30-06 is for. Oh, never mind. That's okay. Just 250,000 rounds per insurgent. You got to wonder if we're getting any more mileage out of the bombs and the cruise missiles. It can't be any cheaper, because the cruise missiles are what, a couple of million bucks a piece, and you can only kill 30 or 40 people. We really do have to up our blood to munitions ratio, don't we? And see, it's not just me saying that.
they're having a little trial out at Camp Pendleton, California, of a Marine who is at present charged with murder. Corporal Trent D. Thomas is charged with murder. And a Marine Corporal, this from an AP story, a Marine Corporal testifying in Trent Thomas's trial today said Marines in his unit in Iraq began routinely beating the snot out of Iraqis after officers ordered them to, and I quote here, crank up the violence level. Crank up the violence level, Marine! Sir, yes, sir. Corporal Saul H. Lopez Romo testified under oath for the defense, mind you, for the individual charged with murder. He is apparently utilizing the I was only following orders defense. We were told to crank up the violence level. A juror, a member of the military jury of the court-martial, asked what he meant. He said, "We beat people, sir!" Within weeks of allegedly being scolded for not beating people enough, seven Marines and a Navy corpsman. Corpsman? A Navy corpsman? Doesn't that mean, like, isn't that the naval equivalent of a medic? Went out late one night to find and kill a suspected insurgent in the village of Hamandiya near the Abu Ghraib prison. The Marines and corpsman were from 2nd Platoon, Kilo Company, 3rd Battalion, 5th Regiment. Hoo-ah. Lopez Romo said the suspected insurgent was known to his neighbors as the Prince of Jihad. He'd been arrested several times and later released by the Iraqi legal system. They couldn't find him. So since they couldn't find him, the Marines and a corpsman dragged another man from his house and blew his brains out and then planted an AK-47 assault rifle near his body, trying to make it look like he'd been killed in a shootout. Four Marines and the corpsman, who were originally charged with murder, have been allowed to plead out to reduced charges. They have been given jail sentences ranging from 10 months to 8 years. Thomas had pleaded guilty, but we withdrew his plea and is the first defendant to go to court-martial. Lopez Romo, who was not part of the squad in its late-night mission, said he saw nothing wrong with what Thomas did. Look, the Associated Press buried the lead again. A Marine corporal testifying in a... This is how it should have read. A Marine corporal testifying in a court-martial said Marines in his unit began routinely beating Iraqis after officers ordered them to crank up the violence level. He also testified that he saw nothing wrong with that or with what defendant Corporal Trent Thomas was accused of, namely murder. I didn't see it as an execution, sir, he told the judge. I see it as killing the enemy. The man had not fired on these Marines. He had not engaged them. They simply dragged him out of his home, within sight, perhaps, of his children, within sight perhaps of his wife, and they put him down in the filthy street and they shot him like a dog, and then they used a drop gun. He was unarmed. Lopez Romo and two other Marines, of course, were also charged in August with assaulting an Iraqi 2 weeks before the killing. Those charges were later dropped. Wonder why. Can you say plea bargain? I thought you could. Corporal Thomas's attorneys are claiming that he suffers from PTSD and traumatic brain injury from his combat duty in Fallujah in 2004, arguing that Thomas believed he was following a lawful order to get tougher with suspected insurgents. Lopez Romo also testified that a procedure called dead checking was routine. If Marines entered a house where a man was wounded, instead of checking to see whether he needed medical aid, they shot him to make sure he was dead. Let me read that for you again. Corporal Lopez Romo said a procedure called dead checking was routine. If Marines entered a house where a man was wounded, instead of checking to see whether he needed medical aid, they shot him to make sure he was dead. This, Corporal Lopez Romo testified to under oath. He was also under oath when he looked at the court-martial and said, if somebody is worth shooting once, they're worth shooting twice. Stomach turning yet? The trial got back underway today. In many ways, I would like to just sort of turn the lights off and end the show now. That one's a little hard to handle. It's a little hard to handle. But what do you want? What do you want from this politicized military? What do you want from a military that is thrown into an occupation in which it cannot tell the good guys from the bad guys, and in which it largely believes there are no good guys? What do you want? What do you want? You pay for this. I pay for this. If somebody is worth shooting once, they're worth shooting twice. Yeah, that's funny, ain't it? I don't care who you are, that's funny. Anybody want to stand up and sing? I don't have it in me. Geneva Conventions? We don't need no stinking Geneva Conventions, do we? But by God, if something like that was done to an American soldier, we'd kill 100 in vengeance. Wait a minute. That's what's going on already. And by the way, in case you forgot, in the middle of if somebody's worth shooting once, they're worth shooting twice, and I don't see it as an execution, sir, I see it as killing the enemy. In the middle of all that, please remember that his testimony is also that they did all this after they got dressed down by a Marine officer who told them to crank up the violence level. Let's go to the phones. Jim joins us. Hey, Jim.
Oh, hey, Bob, how you doing?
I was doing better till I got to this one.
Yeah, I understand that. I appreciate that. You know, it's a strange thing. Even the heartless SS, when they were having to shoot all those people when they were moving into the eastern countries and stuff like that, one of the reasons they switched to another method of execution was because of the terrible morale it was having on their own soldiers.
Because you can't just sit there and machine gun unarmed civilians and live with it.
Exactly. And even at the Bonsai Conference, when they decided that they would use a more industrial form of extermination, they said, you know, our own men can't take it, and it's causing such morale problems. And, you know, I just can't think of how this same lesson can't be visited upon us. And I had a first cousin who was in Vietnam, and he had PTSD. And when the things finally began to hit him very hard, and eventually he was well, killed by a heart attack. And when he went to see the Veterans Administration, they had okayed him, and then he had to go to the Social Security Administration. And the doctor simply told him, when he was sitting across the table or the desk of the doctor, well, you know, why don't you just get over it?
Just get over it.
That's what he told him.
Wow.
I talked to his wife this afternoon. She and I had a long conversation about my first cousin.
Mm-hmm.
We were boys together. We grew up together. And this boy took two shots in the chest. Came back. And the doctor, when he finally could not continue any further at the Social Security Administration, because they'll send you to their own doctor, they said, well, you just get over it.
How do you... how can a medical professional say something like that and keep a license, Jim? We're down the rabbit hole, aren't we?
God only knows. God only knows.
What? See, these guys are coming home. That's what keeps going through my mind. They're coming home. And sooner or later... I looked at it as anybody worth shooting once was worth shooting twice is going to wear thin, isn't it, Jim?
Well, yeah, and you know, when I compare even the realization of those monsters who controlled the SS, realizing the deleterious effect that it was having on their own soldiers and that horrible mission that they were put on, you know, to go and just shoot people out of hand, and they tried to do something about it, which was equally horrible. But I mean, can't we even learn a lesson from that?
Sorry, no, I don't think they're teaching it, Jim. I'm not trying to be a smartass or anything, but I don't think they're teaching it. I don't think they're teaching any of that kind of stuff. You know, it was a couple of years ago that the news came out that we were taking our our seed corn, basically. And we were consuming our seed corn. The guys who knew, the guys who had learned, who'd stayed in the Corps, who'd stayed in the Army, who were doing the training, who were doing the teaching, we got so hard up a couple of years ago that we sent them into battle. We've lost them now. And that's how you wind up with stuff like this. And you wind up with Marine officers who say, go crank up the violence level a little bit. What the hell's the violence level? It's an occupation. It's a war. How can you... Is there a sliding scale for warfare violence, Jim?
Apparently in their mind.
You know, I'm looking in the chat room, and I just saw where somebody wrote, this just makes my heart hurt. What have we done to our babies? And that's a question we won't answer for 5 or 10 more years, is it, Jim?
Well, I think we're going to have to answer that before 5 or 10 more years are out, because basically what we're going to have... Well, we're going to have a generation of people who are so seriously damaged and antisocial and incapable of functioning in society. And these are going to be the aftermath of all these wars that were so important when they were fought. And then when they were over, half the people can't remember why they were fought and what they were fought about. That's our most wars.
It's like Excedrin headache number 629, Jim. I mean, just reading this story, there's just this ache right above my eyeballs and right across my forehead. This is my country doing this. And this is one isolated incident that's being talked about under oath. And the laws of statistics say that if this has happened once in this theater of operations, how many times has it happened, Jim, that we don't know about?
The powers of 10.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this sort of thing increases not arithmetically, not geometrically.
Exponentially.
Exponentially, yeah, it is.
Well, I mean, even considering the military command structure, if a Marine officer dresses somebody down and he says crank up the violence level, how many men are under a second lieutenant?
Oh, that's a lieutenant. A second lieutenant would be an assistant lieutenant leader.
Okay, so first, second lieutenant,
but
first lieutenant.
But it all depends.
What, 20, 30 guys?
Yeah, it could be, yeah, and it could be more.
And if it's coming from a captain, how many? And if it's coming from a major, how many? And a lieutenant colonel and a bird colonel, how many, how many, how many?
So you're going up from the, basically from your platoon to the company to the...
regimental.
To the battalion to the regimental, yeah. Just goes on up and... But, I mean, that's the way it is. But this afternoon, when my first cousin's widow told me this afternoon what that doctor had said to her husband, who had come back and who had tried to make a useful contribution to life, it was just absolutely mind-blowing.
It's enough to make you want to run around the house screaming, isn't it?
You got it.
And I don't understand why the whole nation isn't doing that. But the whole nation won't hear this story, Jim.
Well, unfortunately not. But I think I think the whole nation has heard it. They just don't care. They just don't want to pay attention to it. It doesn't affect my kids, so why should... What it's like Alfred E. Newman. What me worry?
Jim, that may very well be even worse. Sometimes negligence is worse than an intentional act.
Well, sure, the sins of omission versus the sins of commission.
Sure.
You know, I've heard what's his name, Bob in North Dakota talk about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm sure probably somebody may have said that to him or one of his buddies.
Get over it.
And yeah, and sometimes I couldn't understand. I could understand. I understood only too well what he was saying, having been associated with this myself, and I just didn't want to admit it. I just didn't want to think that we were that heartless.
But we are, aren't we?
Yeah, I sometimes think we are, and I just hate it.
Jesus.
And it can certainly just really make you incapable of thinking properly and incapable of trying to make, you know, sense out of something that was totally senseless. And I just don't, I simply can't understand why we continue, after all the lessons that history has taught us, that we have to repeat these things again.
Me either. Jim, we got to roll. Thank you, friend.
Yes, sir.
Take care. And on that we end. I won't be here tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is a rerun. Wednesday I'll be back for prayer meeting. Thank you, Agnes, for producing. Again, I apologize for screwing up the schedule today. It was entirely my fault. Thank you, John Fox. Can't wait till you're back incommunicado. Not incommunicado, but incommunicado. Ben Birch is the hardest working man in liberal talk. Every program that happens on the horn happens because of Ben Birch. Remember that. If you have an opportunity and you haven't used the magic button there at headonradionetwork.com to help us keep this going, we would appreciate it if you can spare it, if you would. We also appreciate the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, who helped us get this network going and thereby are helping in their own right to save the American dream while they build the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. State troopers shot and killed an armed man that tried to enter the governor's office at the Colorado State Capitol this afternoon. He claimed he was the emperor and was there to take over. Governor Ritter, working in a temporary office at the other end of the building, was unhurt. News of radioactive water spilling into the Sea of Japan after the world's most powerful nuclear reactor was damaged in today's earthquake was withheld from the public for hours. The 6.8 quake shook the northwest coast of Japan, twisting roads, bridges, and train tracks, leveling buildings and cracking open the ground. 9 people are dead, 900 injured. Strong aftershocks are expected for days. Cardinal Roger Mahoney has formally apologized to more than 500 victims of sexual abuse by Catholic priests in Los Angeles. The $660 million settlement, the largest of its kind, will be divided among the victims. President Bush has announced a multilateral conference on Middle East peace to take place this fall. Israel, the Palestinian Authority, and neighboring governments that support a Palestinian state are scheduled to attend. In Australia, the doctor accused of supporting his cousins, the terrorists involved in the failed bombings in London and Glasgow last month, had his bail overturned by a federal court. He'll be detained for several months as his case winds through the Australian court system. 16 Saudi Arabian prisoners have been transferred from Guantanamo Bay Prison to Riyadh. Once home, they were immediately detained by Saudi authorities. That makes 77 Saudis that have now been sent home from Gitmo. The LA Times reports that 45% of the foreign fighters in Iraq are Saudis, and nearly half of those in U.S. Iraqi prisons are Saudis. In Iraq, some 8,000 troops have launched a new operation aimed at clearing out al-Qaeda insurgents south of Baghdad. Also in Iraq, 2 suicide car bombings today in Kirkuk killed at least 80 people. Marine General Peter Pace says the Joint Chiefs of Staff will submit a report of their own to the President in September, separate from General Petraeus' anticipated report. According to the Associated Press, the Joint Chiefs could suggest several courses of action, including another troop buildup. In northwest Pakistan, the al-Qaeda killed as many as 80 people. That was in a weekend series of revenge bombings in retaliation for the Pakistan Army's seizure of the Red Mosque compound last week. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Coming up next, science and business.
This is Beyonce. For a performer, a smile is an instant reward. And once you've seen the smiles on the faces of children at Shriners Hospital, you'll know why the Shriners have been providing their world-renowned medical care to kids for over 80 years at absolutely no charge. At Shriners Hospital, innovative research and teaching programs are combined with specialized services and treatments for kids with orthopedic, burn, or spinal cord problems.